The turmoil happening in Venezuela, while definitely extreme, is not totally unique when the extremeness of the situation is removed. A less extreme but potentially more explosive situation is occurring right now in the Sudan. Most of us are somewhat familiar with the Sudan, with the southern portion of it becoming a separate nation in July of 2011. This made South Sudan the first new country to come into existence in Africa since Eritrea split from Ethiopia in 1993. But as of this moment, the Sudanese military is in the middle of a tense standoff with civilian protesters after deposing longtime leader Omar al-Bashir. In this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we are going to be talking about what's going on in Sudan and how we got here.
Lessons from the Screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
Welcome to another episode of Lessons from the Screen, the show where we review whether or not any particular information that you can get from any particular screen of any particular kind is worth your time. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. You're welcome. Lessons from the Screen is sponsored by, as always, PacSync, a black activist and advocacy organization and a think tank with the purpose of increasing the quality of life of black people in America through education, culture shift, and economics. You can check them out at www.pactsinc.org. Do whatever you can to help them because they're doing whatever they can to help you. Check out the Learning Center, donate, tell a friend to tell a friend, take a survey, do whatever you can to get involved. Your support is definitely needed and appreciated. And without much further ado, let's go ahead and get into it, find out what it do and what's going on in the Sudan. So as with most every other current event, we have to go back. And in this case, it isn't necessary, but we'll go all the way back in 1989. And in actuality, the story begins even earlier in the 1950s. But going back to 1989 starts the regime, the reign of President Omar al-Bashir. So before declaring independence in December of 1955, you see what I did there? That's pretty creative. Anyways, so before declaring independence in December of 1955, the area known as the Sudan was controlled jointly by the British and the Egyptians. The British had the bulk of the power in this situation, with the Egyptians having only local influence, but on paper they were equal rulers of the land and its people. However, in 1953, the UK and Egypt concluded long-going discussions and agreed that the Sudan should be a self-governing nation, with a transitional parliament being placed in 1954. And the power of the country being focused in the north. This was big because during the period of British rule from 1896 to 1955, the north and the south had been governed as separate states. The north was Islamic, with its languages being Arabic and English, and the south was Christian, with its languages being English and the many native languages of the area. Now, this was by design, as the British required passports to travel between the two districts and actively discouraged the spread of Islam in the south. That's where all of its Christian missionaries were. The British government wanted to add the south to its block of Eastern African colonies. However, the British later decided that the south should be integrated with the north and the two should become one nation. Unfortunately for the south, that one nation would be ruled by the Islamic North in the Arabic language, which posed big problems for the Christian and traditional South and its English-speaking leaders. Of the roughly 800 or so governmental positions vacated by the British when they left, four were given to Southerners. This caused bad blood amongst the Sudanese people and feelings of betrayal amongst the South Sudanese towards the British. So in 1955, an army in southern Sudan revolted, and while it was suppressed, it established an ongoing guerrilla insurgency in the south and marked the beginning of the first Sudanese civil war. The nation was founded already in a state of armed conflict, although low in activity. Tensions were eased, however, when the north promised to create a federal system of government, meaning they would have states basically. However, they went back on that promise, leading to another mutiny in the South by army officers that will go on to spark 17 years of civil war from 1955 to 1972. In 1958, a general overthrew parliament in a bloodless coup and took over the country. While he promised to return Sudan to civilian leadership, he did not carry out that promise either. Well, not either, because he didn't make the first promise, but people in power have a habit of not doing what they say they're going to do. And in 1964, the country broke out in protest and civil unrest that forced the military to back down, with elections being held in 1965. In 1969, the military took control of the country again, and this time abolished parliament and outlawed all political parties. The military even temporarily overthrew the military as different factions vied for power. In 1972, the Addis Ababa Agreement led to a ceasefire that lasted for 10 years, putting a halt to the ongoing civil war. In 1985, the military overtook the country again and created a 15-man military council to rule the Sudan until 1986, when a coalition government of various political parties took over the country with Sadiq al-Muhari at the head. In 1987, the civil war was reignited because the government instituted Islamic law and underwent an Islamization policy, attempting to convert the entire country to Islam. In 1989, as negotiations were being held to end the civil war, the military took control of the government again, with the head of the military force this time being none other than General Omar al-Bashir, who would eventually declare himself president and rule the country for the next 30 years. He was not interested in compromise, and so the civil war raged on, displacing millions, killing millions, and according to some estimates, it killed millions, before it finally ended. Now, he did have elections, but you know how that whole thing goes. So while the civil war raged on, President al-Bashir seemed not to take an interest in developing certain non-Arab regions of the Sudan and took a very hard stance against rebels and protesters. Now, as he settled into his role as president, the second in command of his party, al-Turabi, took control of the National Congress. Al-Turabi had strong ties to Islamic fundamentalists, including people like Osama bin Laden, which caused the U.S. to recognize the Sudan as a state sponsor of terrorism in 1993, bringing heavy sanctions against the nation. And in 1997, those sanctions were strengthened, preventing U.S. businesses from any dealings with the Sudan government or its people. The country backed the Iraq invasion of Kuwait and allowed several terrorist leaders to find sanctuary in the country's capital. Although Bashir did take some actions to combat the negative image on his country globally, such as working with the French in secret to capture Carlos the Jackal in the Sudan. Carlos was a Venezuelan serving a life. He is a Venezuelan because he's not dead. Currently serving a life sentence in France for murdering a French informant and two French counterintelligence agents. And even as he's currently in prison, he's still been implicated and suggested to have been a part of several acts of terrorism on French soil. Now, these sanctions, going back to the sanctions on the Sudan, were causing a tremendous amount of financial pressure, as Sudan depended heavily on its exports of petroleum products. And with the sanctions in place, moving those products was extremely difficult, especially considering the UN had joined the U.S. in the sanctions. Now, al-Bashir and his homeboy had a falling out in 2000 when al-Turabi introduced a bill that would curb the president's powers, resulting in al-Bashir dissolving the parliament, declaring a state of emergency, and imprisoning al-Turabi briefly on two separate occasions. But the biggest mistake al-Bashir made, probably, or the biggest mark anyways on his presidency, came in 2003. Now, as mentioned earlier, President al-Bashir didn't seem to take much interest in developing his non-Arab citizens or the land that they lived on. And this sparked protests not just in the South, but in the West as well. And I'm referring to, of course, the Darfur genocide, Darfur. The Arab elite in the Sudan had long been accused of engaging in Arab apartheid, a campaign that segregated Arabs and non-Arabs, treating the non-Arabs as second-class citizens, and in some cases, engaging in ethnic cleansing, aka genocide, aka kill a whole bunch of people that don't look like me, or don't talk like me, or don't act like me, aka because I can and I don't like them and I don't feel like being tolerant, aka. The Arabs in control of the Sudan were accused of monopolizing power and excluding non-Muslim blacks. And while it was accused, nothing like what happened at Darfur had been seen in the public yet. Now, during this incident that continues to this very day, the government and organizations sponsored by the government were directly responsible for attacks on civilians in the area that amounted to hundreds of thousands of people dying and millions of people being displaced. In September of 2016, just around the way, just the other day, it is believed that the government launched a chemical weapons attack on civilians, killing at least 250 people, with the majority of those people being children. Rape and abductions were also not out of the question. It was the actions of the Sudanese government in the ongoing war of Darfur that caused President al-Bashir to be labeled as a war criminal and to be sought for trial by the international community. The situation in Darfur was also one of the causes for the Chad-Sudan proxy war, which officially commenced in 2005 as refugees from Darfur fled to Chad and Chad engaged in supporting the rebels. The relationship was repaired in 2010 and Chad eventually stopped supporting the rebels and kicked them all out of the country of Chad and blah, 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 blah. But Darfur was messed up, and I'm sure most of us that were alive and aware are an adult at the time are very much aware of what happened in Darfur. There have been plenty of documentaries and everything else about that incident. That was a pretty horrific incident. So as we come into 2005, the South was still fighting against what it viewed to be Arab oppression in the North. And the West was fighting against what it viewed to be Arab oppression in the East. However, to some, they seemed to have different goals. The South wanted to become its own nation, which was a difficult prospect because of how mineral and oil rich the South was, accounting for roughly 80% of the nation's crude oil production and roughly half of the nation's economy. Meanwhile, some speculated that the rebels in Darfur simply wanted better treatment. And of course, there were others that also suggested that the Darfur rebels might also want to separate from the Sudan as well. And in 2005, an agreement was reached between the Southern Christians and traditionalists and the Northern Arabs. The peace treaty, or the Northern Muslims. The peace treaty would end the longest civil war in African history and hopefully bring peace to the most diverse nation in Africa. The Arabs were also hoping it would open up opportunities to develop the more than 60% of arable land, which is land available for farming, that wasn't developed in the Sudan. It has more arable land than any other Arab nation, and again, most of it is not developed. But the peace deal that was agreed to in 2005 gave the South autonomy for 6 years, that would be followed by a referendum on secession. If the South decided not to secede, the two would merge their armies into one. And for the 6 years of this agreement, the two regions would split oil profits 50-50. Jobs ratios would also be established, and Islamic law would stay in the North, with the South being free to make up its own mind about how it was going to judge its people. In 2011, after the 6 years was up, the South was like chalking you the deuces. And they was out, and the North was like, these hoes ain't loyal. No, that's not really what it was. But anyways, the South voted in referendum to succeed and become its own nation. This left the Sudan in a bind, losing half of its economy and a good chunk of its mineral wealth. But the South didn't get out of this unscathed either, as the only means that they have to ship their crude oil out of the country was through the sanctioned Sudan, effectively sanctioning the South Sudan until new pipelines can be built. They continue to lobby the U.S. and the U.N. to ease the sanctions on the Sudan so that they could ship out their crude oil. But that's ongoing. There are currently talks about developing a pipeline through Ethiopia. But until that's built, the South Sudan has a whole bunch of oil that they really can't do anything with, or that is really difficult to do something with. But al-Bashir was also accused by various people, both in and out of the Sudan, for stealing the country's wealth for his own gain and extreme levels of corruption. Elections were marked by imprisoning political opponents and intimidating others into not becoming political opponents. And in one case, such as in, I believe it was 2005, where he was the only legal candidate on the ballot available to be voted for. But the situation grew extremely dire in 2018 as the country saw its inflation top 60%, which was second only to the inflation of Venezuela. Go back and check out the show I did. I think it was two shows ago. I did a show on what's going on in Venezuela right now. So if you listen to that show, you'll see a lot of tie-in and connections between what's happening here and various things that are going on here. But going back to this show, inflation, back to the Sudan, inflation topped 60%. The price of bread tripled and basic supplies began to come up short, begin to be in short supply in the nation. At this point, protesters in the country took to the streets en masse to protest al-Bashir, and he responded with a strong showing of force. As the protesters set fire to the National Party headquarters in two cities, authorities responded with tear gas, rubber bullets, and live rounds, resulting in the death of dozens and injuring of many more. The country turned off social media and restricted the internet, put a curfew into place, and shut down the schools. The protests continued into 2019, and so did the government response of shooting and imprisoning protesters. In February, al-Bashir announced the dissolution of the central and regional governments and placed military generals in charge of the area. Things continued to spiral downhill until April 11th, when Bashir was removed from power by the military and placed under house arrest. The military also released all political prisoners. The military engaged the protesters in negotiations for a few days, as the protesters want a civilian-led government, not a military-led one. But the military seems unwilling to give in, causing the protests that started with al-Bashir and economic issues to continue, even though al-Bashir was removed from office. And even though the military general in charge stepped down and placed the general favorable to the protesters in charge of the military. But even he, this new guy, this new general that the protesters enjoy because he's not a war criminal and he's not guilty of committing acts of genocide, even he seems unwilling to go as far as relinquishing military control over the country right now. And while there have been discussions that the military has said it's open to complying with the demands of the protesters have on various occasions stopped negotiations because they feel like the military isn't genuine in its desire to want to see a civilian government take control of the country. Al-Bashir currently finds himself in solitary in the same prison that he placed many of his own political opponents. The military continues to struggle with the protesters, who will not let up until they get the civilian-led government of their own making. Meanwhile, the military is receiving pledges of support and finances from Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, amounting to more than $3 billion in money, cash, cream, dollar bills, y'all. This situation continues to unfold in a way that makes it an extremely explosive situation. It makes it an extremely, extremely, extremely explosive situation. But the lines seem to be dividing in the same way that they always do with regards to the international community, the United States, the UN, and all of their allies on one side. And if Russia and China get involved, we already have Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and a couple of those other countries involved on the other side. So, again, in this show, I'm going to do the same thing I did in the Venezuelan show. I'm going to ask you guys to give me your thoughts, your opinions, and what lessons you think we could learn from this. And Don't worry, I'm going to get back to giving my own opinion because I do have them and I have a lot of them and they're in ample supply and they're always ready to go. But for these two shows, I really want to know what you as a listener, what you think about what's going on in these two locations, Venezuela and in the Sudan. And if you think there's anything at all that can be learned from these situations and what sort of lessons do you think that they are and how they apply. So I'll be looking forward to hearing from you. Go ahead and go to the Lessons from the Screen page on the Freedom Train's website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. You'll see the Lessons from the Screen tab. This show will be in current events, right along with all of the other current events. So check it out. Leave a comment. Let me know what you think. Let me know how you feel about the show as well. And I look forward to hearing from you next week. This has been another episode of Lessons from the Screen.
Lessons from the Screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trust, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
I want to thank you guys once again for tuning in to Lessons from the Screen. I also want to encourage you guys to head over to the website, www.freedomtrainnetwork.com. You can head over there to the website, gain access to all of the shows on the Freedom Train Network, including this one. You can access to old shows, new shows. You should also check out the Freedom Train app. You can find it in the Google Play Store. If you research Google Play or research Freedom Train Radio or Freedom Train Presents or Freedom Train Network, you'll find the app there and you'll see the Choo Choo Train. That is our trademark Choo Choo Train for the Freedom Train. You can get all of the shows right there on your cell phone. Notification whenever we drop anything, or maybe we just want to see the notification saying hi. So you should definitely go and get that app. And you should also take a listen to our live internet radio streams throughout the weekend. We're dropping lectures, we're dropping shows, we're dropping all kinds of interesting things on the weekends. So definitely take advantage of that. I want to thank you guys again for supporting us. And as always, we appreciate you. We will see you next week. This is Freedom Train Network Presents Lessons from the Screen.